Veritex Community Bank Studios. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, H-Town? Hey! How we doing?
He's Blank. I'm Branham. Brendan behind the glass. It is a Monday edition of The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Good weekend?
Good weekend, everybody.
Everybody good weekend?
Yeah, quiet, but good.
Good weekend?
Yeah. You?
Good weekend? It was a good weekend. It's a good weekend. Not wow. Santa already on Twitter saying, can we blame yesterday's Astros loss on Brendan Riley?
No.
I guess because he didn't play the Dito?
We cannot do that.
I actually gave him the chance to do it on Twitter if he wanted to, but I still think Odorizzi pitched well enough.
He did pitch well enough. The Astros had a 3-run lead in the sixth inning.
Yep.
Like, they pitched well enough to win that game. Now, he put a couple of runners on, gave up the home run.
Did you not think that the Achilles was going to go or something when he fielded that comebacker?
I missed it. I missed that play.
Oh, so that actually was the reason why he gave up two of the runs. Well, actually, Stanek gave up
four
of them.
Oh, I do remember. Yeah.
But the minute he came off the mound and slipped and then went to get the ball, it's like, oh, God, here we go again.
See, I just saw the bad throw. I don't even remember I didn't see the slip.
Yeah, he kind of slipped and went down and stumbled and got up, and I thought, oh, now he's really going to do it.
No, I thought he pitched well enough to, he pitched all right. He was fine. 3 runs over 5 1/3 for Jake Odorizzi. I think he would take that every single time. Mm-hmm. For Jake Odorizzi. Would have loved for him to get through the sixth inning, but Stanek gave up a couple of inherited runners to score. Jake Myers didn't really help him out.
No, he did not.
I didn't love that. Like, Jake, like, you're not going to always make that play. Like, I get it. Like, I thought he should have. I think Jake Myers would tell you that he should have. Didn't love the going into your shoulder as soon as you don't make the play.
Jeremy, here's where I throw a monkey wrench in whatever format that we've talked about for the day already. Because the first thing, and I'll take you back to, because Friday, we don't really have to watch the games as closely sometimes because we don't talk about it till Monday and there's other games that are played. Go back to Friday in a game, another game that could have been won by the starting pitcher when you're winning 1-0. There was a ball hit to right center field that ended up being the reason why Oakland got the two of the runs. That hit not the base, but the lower quarter of the bullpen fence. Jake Myers pulled up 10 feet from that fence and started to already go on the defensive back to home plate and, like, play it to come off the wall. If he had just kept going on the path he was on, he could have caught that ball at the base of the warning track. And I'm starting to worry. Like, I understood when we came back, we said, you know, he's going to have to mentally get over some things. But then you couple it with the play you're mentioning where it's the other shoulder. But the minute he doesn't catch it, he goes to the woe is me card. And I'm like, dude's got a lot going on in his mind right now that's not conducive to playing the best defense for the Astros.
Yeah, I mean, he's made some good plays. And that was, you know, he was a diving effort. It hit him in the glove. I mean, that would have been a good play if he makes it. The going to the, oh, my shoulder doesn't feel good after he did not make the play. And then, oh, yeah, I'm good enough to stay in the game was kind of awkward to me. I mean, do you feel like Dusty cost the Astros the game yesterday?
Not they necessarily. Lost 4-3? Cost them completely, but it's very easy for me personally to point the finger at Dusty Baker because you're not sitting in a situation like you were a few games ago when your bullpen was somewhat depleted and you really needed to go deep into the game with your starters, maybe a little further than you would like to with your relievers. You had a full complement of your entire bullpen and you knew after the game that they weren't going to pitch until Thursday. You were going to be just fine. Mm-hmm. Montero did his job for an inning. The most pitches he had thrown all year was 30. He was already at 30 when he threw the wild pitch that allowed the runner to get to the extra base, which ended up scoring on the base hit by Voit. And you look at it and you go, he shouldn't have been in the game. Because most of these games with the runner on second base, you're probably not going to get to the 11th inning. You had Neris still to go. You had Presley still to go. You had other options. But the fact that you tried to push it on Montero, and it, you know, at the time, I'm sure you don't think that a wild pitch is going to cost you the game, but he was getting tired. You could see he was starting to kind of lose a little bit of control because this was a new territory for him. And then that wild pitch ends up costing him the game. And now suddenly, instead of ho-hum, another series win, you beat a team you were supposed to beat, you won 2 out of 3, let's go to the break. They're one of the lead stories on SportsCenter because they're too good of a team to be losing to the A's. Are they starting to crumble? And it's like,
what?
No, but yeah, it was them and the Mets.
It was their first series loss in like the last 11 series.
Them and the Mets. Are they good teams that are starting to come back to the pack? It's like,
stop
it.
That's hot takey there.
Yeah.
It was a first series loss in 11 series. I don't care who it's against. It's very difficult to win 11 series in a row. Like, if you're playing the Oakland A's 11 straight series, you're going to lose one of those 11 series. That's just the way baseball works. I didn't hate Montero so much being used in those two innings. He hadn't pitched since the 14th. So, and he's not going to pitch again until at the very earliest Thursday. So, like, he needs to get in the work. Nairis pitched the night before, and I thought he was effective, actually, in the eighth inning as well. He got a couple of weak ground outs, and then the back-to-back hits, even those were, like, you know, they were line drive singles. The wild pitch you called it, I mean, that was the most frustrating thing. I hate free passes, and I hate free bases. Mm-hmm. Like, those two things just grind my gears. I hate giving away free bases. And I hate walking and hitting players. I just absolutely cannot stand
it. And every time you think it's not going to bite you in the ass, it takes a firm, big teeth bite out of whatever you got going on. And it hurts you. It basically cost you the game yesterday.
They've been doing that quite a bit lately, too. And a lot of times it's been pass balls, if we're being completely honest, by Martin Maldonado. And I'm not going to say, oh, the Astros should trade for a catcher because Maldonado, what he brings you is very, very important, calling a game, all of that stuff. But it is one thing I want to limit. It's one thing that I would like to see limited. If we're talking about, like, wish list in the second half, stop giving away free bases. Like, the walks, you're going to have some walks here and there. You're going to have some hit batters here and there. I know you're going to have wild pitches and pass balls here and there. But it feels like the Astros at times couldn't avoid those. And it's very nitpicky because the Astros finished the first half of the season with 59 wins. They're on pace for well over 100. And even with Seattle having won 14 in a row, they're still only 9 games back. In the American League West. So the Astros are fine. I'm not going to overreact to one series, especially the Friday game, in which the Astros ran out their Sugar Land Space Cowboy lineup right, for the most part and didn't have anybody get to the ballpark until 5 o'clock. They were winning yesterday's game 3-0 and going into the sixth inning. That's one that they let slip away. I'm not pushing the panic button at all with this team. I'm totally fine with the way the first half has went for the Houston Astros.
No, look, I just think we constantly, to me, I have to point out what I see. And what I see when we always say Dusty's going to Dusty is that was one that I don't think, that was forced. I don't think you had to do what you did. And I don't think Dusty, just like we were just talking about, I don't think Dusty looked at it and saw that was a chance for us to lose the game there, or that was a chance that a wild pitch was going to come back and bite us. But I don't feel the need to extend Montero, even if you have all those days off, because you have every other arm in the bullpen ready to go at your access that you could have used and still done what you needed to do to get where you needed to go. You're playing a team that you should beat.
So the only option would be Houston Nairis there in the eighth inning.
Nairis
or
there,
inning.
Presley there, and then if
you
have
to... Well, Presley in the ninth. You're saving
saying,
for the ninth.
I'm saying Nairis there, Presley in the ninth, Seth... Or somebody else could take you through the 10th or 11th if it had to go that far.
Right, right. But if we're breaking it down for the 8th inning, the real only other option would have been Nairis.
I would have used Nairis in the 8th, Presley in the 9th, and you could even go Presley for 2 innings if you wanted to, but even still, you didn't have to do that.
Why would you be okay with Presley for 2 innings but not Montero?
I'm not saying you had to go to... If he wanted to go to a 2-inning stint, Presley just did it if you wanted to do it again, but I still even wouldn't even do that. You had too many fresh arms that you could have just kept rolling through arms.
You retired 5 in a row.
I understand. I just... Look, looking back at it, the minute I would have had someone warm, because the minute that I got him as high as in a pitch count that he's gotten all year, I'm not trying to hurt the guy either. I mean, if this is as far as he's gone all season, why am I pushing that threshold right now?
Yeah, I think it was the fact that he hadn't been used in a while, and then you're not going to use anybody until Thursday. It is odd that he used a reliever for multiple innings. Like, the Presley situation was kind of like, oh, okay, we need somebody else for another inning. The Astros have pretty much been static, and Nairis has really been the seventh inning guy, Montero the eighth inning guy. So as soon as they brought Montero in the seventh, I just felt like they weren't going to use Nairis. I felt like he was almost unavailable at that point. Some people texting in saying you can simply chalk up yesterday's loss up to Yordan not playing. Offense clearly isn't the same without him, or even the series. I still think you should beat the Oakland A's. Like, I don't want to use that as an excuse. Like, I'm not going to overreact losing a series to the Oakland A's. But if Yordan's not in the lineup, if Brantley's not in the lineup, like, I don't want to get into the habit of being like, oh, well, the Astros, they lost because Yordan's not playing. They lost because they're not at full health. Let's wait till Lance McCullers comes back. That's part of the game. Like, you're going to have injuries. Dudes are going to go on the injured list, especially injury-prone players. And people don't like to hear the truth about Yordan Alvarez and Michael Brantley, but they are injury-prone. I mean, we've seen it with Yordan Alvarez, brief career. He's missed a ton of games with injuries. Brantley, recently, last few years, has missed tons of games with injuries. Kind of one reason I wouldn't mind maybe trading for a bat that could potentially fit in a lot of different areas. But I don't like using the Yordan not in the lineup as an excuse. Are the Astros offensively better with Yordan? Yes, absolutely, of course. But he's not in the lineup. I don't like playing the Yordan card. Well, we lost because Yordan's not here. We lost because Yordan's not here.
The same reason you look at Friday's game and say, with the Sugar Land Space Cowboys lineup, you were winning 1-0 deep into the game.
Mm-hmm. They're winnable.
You're a good enough team that you can beat other teams for one game or a game here and there. And it's not just about Yordan, because you can say Yordan was out, Brantley was out. You were holding Altuve out on Friday night. You know, Dusty said he was going to, and Diaz, you were holding out veterans anyway. But that's almost like saying, well, because one guy is out, that's you just chalk that up to a game that you're giving away? No, I don't think so. And I think that especially if like right from the jump you go down 3 or 4 runs, you say, you know what, it was just one of those games that we're going to have to chalk up for. We needed the rest. We weren't going to push it, and we'll take our medicine. But because you were winning late in the game and you got through a tough night, and it looked like you were in control of the game to win it, and then you lost it, you don't put that on Yordan. You put that on the way you finished the game and the guys that mm-hmm. did what they did to cost you the runs that gave up the lead. And then you just move on. But if it happens twice in 3 games where you don't win a game you should win against a team you should beat, it has nothing to do with Yordan. It has everything to do with sometimes they get a little too free and easy about the fact that they've got this big lead in the division and they're too good of a team to worry about anything else other than themselves.
59 wins, 59-32 yeah. for the Astros entering the break. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776 on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. When we return, what you should be worried about coming out of the All-Star break, it's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about Fitz Roofing. I love the people at Fitz Roofing. Look, because they take care of Houstonians. I had a fence put in my yard a couple months ago. It upped the overall value, look, and appearance of my yard. They can do that for you, too. They do so much more than just roofing, but they do roofing better than anybody else. That's why they got into other services, because they know if you believe, trust, and know that they do the best in roofing, then you can also find out that they'll do the same thing for you in home repairs. They'll do the same thing for you in fences. All you got to do is go to FITZroofing.com and see all the different services they offer and the ways that they can help you. And the biggest thing is, no matter what you got going on before you go anywhere else, see if Fitz can help you and assist, because it's free. Instead of a service charge from a company that's going to come out and then give you the runaround as to how they can help you and you got to get back to them right away, or, you know, the service charge can be roped into if you decide to go with them, the overall price of what they're going to charge you. It's not that complicated, people. Get a free no-obligation inspection today. Go to 832-521-3001. Have them come to you and tell you what they can do to help you. It doesn't cost you anything. If you want them to actually do the job, call them back, book an appointment, and find out before, during, and after the sale. Nobody does it better. No one has better customer service, and no one has the best ratings in the business, the best products in the business, and the best customer service in the business like Fitz Roofing. They take care of you, and you could be the next to be taken care of like all Houstonians are from Fitz Roofing. Check them out today. FITZroofing.com. Get that free no-obligation inspection. 832-521-3001. Fitz Roofing, making a difference one home at a time.
ESPN 97.5. Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, what you should be worried about coming out of the All-Star game for the Houston Astros. A lot of people are looking ahead to Thursday. Look, the Astros have had their All-Star break cut short because of the lockout. You can thank the lockout for that. Thursday is supposed to be a part of the All-Star break. You're not supposed to play on Thursday, but there's, I think, about 10 teams or so in Major League Baseball that are playing. Obviously, the Astros are one of them. So they get a little doubleheader action against the Yankees at home, who they're the best team in the American League, the best record in the American League entering the All-Star break. And then right after that, right after they play 2 games at home, 12-10-5-40, 2 different gates, by the way, they have to fly
right?
to Seattle. Yep. Yep, they're ushering everybody
They're
out.
Not going to walk away from that money, are they?
Nope, don't blame them. But after that game, they have to fly to Seattle. Seattle doesn't play on Thursday, by the way. They're one of the teams that gets that extra day on their All-Star break, which is a nice luxury to have. And I'm sure you've been paying attention. The Seattle Mariners have won 14 games in a row. The division lead still comfortable at 9 games on the year. But a lot of people are looking at the Thursday game against the Yankees like, all right, let's get after the Yankees. Let's get for that doubleheader. Let's go. But Friday's bigger because the Seattle Mariners are suddenly a formidable foe in the American League West.
As we've said in the past, there are objects in your rearview mirror that are closer than they appear. Like, you know, we're now not with a 10-game lead. We're not talking about this insurmountable lead in the division. You're talking about now less than double digits. You're talking about a team that, as you mentioned, has won 14 in a row. You're talking about a team that, whether you're worried about them or not, and there's no time to be worried about them yet, they're not that close, you would like to be able to put your foot on their throat and let them know and remind them one more time, we're still the king of this division, we're still boss, and you're still fighting for a playoff spot, so play for second. But in order to do that, you'd also like to be at full strength and rested as much as possible before you start that big series. And as much as you were okay when the schedule makers decided to do this, when it wasn't pressing and right there on your calendar for the All-Star break this month, you thought, yeah, it's fine. We'll just catch up, lose one extra day. What does that hurt? Because at the time, you didn't think you had to worry about the trip to play Seattle and the Mariners. Now it might be the biggest series of the year so far in terms of just them trying to find a barometer and send a message, you trying to kind of squelch them making a run at the division and establish yourself yet again as the heads-on favorite to win it all, win the division. So it's a bigger series than you thought about at the time, and it's kind of a pain in the ass that you have to – most guys are staying home anyway, so you're not going to have to travel for the doubleheader, but then you get on a plane, and that flight to Seattle is no cakewalk. It is a pain in the butt to fly across the country and get all the way up there into Seattle in the Pacific Northwest. You're going to get in late because that second game, no matter how much you think is a getaway date, they started it a little earlier. They're not doing you any favors. You're still going to get in late, and you're going to have to turn around and be ready for a big game on Friday night, so it's going to be taxing on them.
The Astros also don't have an off day until August 8th. So you're playing, I think it's 17 games in 16 days, something like that. I might be off a game or two over that span, but it's going to be a difficult stretch for the Astros, and it's why the weekend series at Seattle, those three games, because the Mariners are chomping at the bit. They're all of a sudden 9 games behind the Astros in the AL West. They've won 14 in a row. They think that they're going to win 50 in a row because when you get in those win streaks, you think you're never going to lose again. So I'm not worried yet about the Seattle Mariners, but I'm more worried about the Seattle series Friday, Saturday, Sunday than I am the two games against the Yankees on Thursday because it's a 9-game lead. If let's just say Seattle sweeps you in Seattle. They up their win streak from 14 to 17. Now it's a 6-game lead. The Mariners have won 17 in a row. You're still going to play them quite a bit as well the rest of the season. That is what would get my attention. That's where I am now starting to get worried about the American League West. So while, you know, we've crowned the Astros the champions of the AL West, we say that they're going to have a free ride to the playoffs, which, I mean, you still have the wild card thrown into the equation as well. But if you get swept in Seattle coming out of the All-Star break, suddenly it's a race in the AL West.
I mean, if you're sleepless in Seattle, it doesn't help.
And there are going to be sleepless.
Right.
It's going to be a long
flight.
So you start
out being sleepless in Seattle, and then you worry about being swept in Seattle. You have to basically make a statement, so you need all hands on deck. So you hope the rest makes sure, and I don't think there's any reason to believe that Jose Altuve is not going to be ready to go. You know, we saw the extent of his injury and know exactly what happened, and he should be fine. You know that Verlander the same is going to be fine. He just, if he's not going to pitch, then why even be at the game unless you just want the fanfare and be around everything that's been going on. But for the most part, everybody else is going to be ready with the exception of the one big if and question mark, and that's Yordan. It was good to see him on the bench and kind of just looked like he was very relaxed. He had a bat in his hand several times.
He took some BP yesterday,
so,
too.
Yeah, so I'm not real worried about him, but that's a guy you have to have. Like, and Michael Brantley, you just got to figure out where you are and what's going on. Because you would like to be at full strength for that Seattle series. If you want to rest a guy or two for the Yankees, I think they've already shown that they're willing to do that. And they don't want, especially with pitchers, but I think with anybody, because they don't want to overtip their hand if they got to face the Yankees in the playoffs. What they really want to do is be at full strength when you play the Mariners.
What would they overtip?
I mean, if you see a pitcher too many times, you really, it's one thing to see it on video. But it, like, especially when they started moving their rotation and changing pitchers around the last time when the Yankees came here, I think a lot of that had to do with, I think there's a lot of guys that are younger on the Yankees that hadn't seen a lot of Verlander, and he shut them down. You don't need to see him too much before a playoff series when they might catch something or find some tendencies and get comfortable seeing what his pitches do. And so I think that from that standpoint, it's one thing to say, I'm only going to see the Yankees in the playoffs.
Yeah, that's a long time, though. Like July 20th versus
But teams
October.
Are always thinking about it. And I know it happens in every sport, but I know it's the same way that Greg Popovich used to always sit some of his best players whenever he played regular season games against some of the most the bigger favorites in his conference. And I think that from an Astros perspective, I'm not saying it's definite, but I think that, look, I think there's a lot of gamesmanship that goes into it, especially when it's the magnitude of a Yankees-Astros series with the history.
I think they're going to want to smash them.
They want to smash them in the playoffs, so they don't want to give them too much now if they don't have to.
Well, yeah, Dusty last week talked about how he keeps up with the Yankees. Like, he very much has them as a team that he wants to catch. And you're also coming off the All-Star break, right? Like, everybody's going to have, for the most part, 3 days off. So, like, maybe you give a Tucker, one of those two games off because he's going to have the stress of the week. Well, I mean, we'll see. But the Mariners series on Friday, because I understand that the Yankees coming into town is a big deal. They're first in the AL. You're second in the AL. You've suddenly built up a rivalry against the – to me, it's the best rivalry in the American League. I would say it's a better rivalry than the Yankees and the Red Sox at this point, which is crazy to say. But Seattle's coming to get you, and Seattle's won 14 in a row, and Seattle feels very good. Would you consider them a threat in the division right now?
Would I consider what?
Seattle a threat in the division.
Not yet. Not yet. But I think that if there's any team in your division that you should be concerned with, it's the Mariners. It's not the Angels. It's not the Rangers. It's not the A's. That's the one team that you got to keep an eye on. But I think, Jeremy, to my point, they have been very coy about who they're going to start in the Yankee series. And a lot has to do with the fact that because they're playing the Mariners right after that, I would assume that they want their best going up against the Mariners because that means more to them at this point than the final two games of the season against the Yankees.
I'm not sure.
You're going to throw Verlander and Fromber in the first two games against the Yankees and not have them against the Mariners?
They're not throwing Fromber because he's going to pitch in the All-Star game.
Hypothetically, would you throw your two best pitchers against the Yankees or would you make sure that they pitched against the Mariners?
I mean, if the Mariners hadn't won 14 in a row, I would throw them against the Yankees. That would be a more significant game.
That's what I'm saying. Because you have to kind of weigh what's more important at this point in the season with the situation as it stands today, do you save your best pitchers for the Mariners or do you want to just finish the deal against the Yankees?
If I'm the Astros, I'm not looking at it that way. If I'm the Astros, I'm looking at it, okay, what puts Verlander in the best chance to limit his arm for however long? What makes sense with the calendar that's going to benefit Verlander? What makes sense in the calendar
days off
that's,
the
going
opponent?
That's going to benefit Fromber? I'm talking about the arm load. Like, I don't care the opponent. Like, if I'm the Astros and I have a big lead in the division, I understand the Seattle's won 14 in a row. I understand that the Yankees are ahead of you in the American League West, or in the American League period for the top seed in the American League. To me, it's a loser's mentality when I start factoring in the opponent in July. I'm doing whatever puts my team in the best chance to have success. If it means throwing Verlander against the Yankees, then you do it. If it means throwing Verlander on Sunday on a getaway day against Seattle, then you do it. I'm looking at what's in my best interest.
Or if it's making sure that he's ready to go for the playoffs and you don't overextend him.
Right,
I get that.
That's where I'm at.
But I think that I'm just saying from the standpoint of weighing the opponents, I would think that their mentality, whether it's already been that way or it's changed, I would think that they want their best pitchers going up against the Mariners because essentially we said, like, your division now is the American League and you're trying to chase the Yankees. But in reality, because the Mariners have done what they've done recently, you just want to make sure you can put them to bed. And so I would want my best pitchers going in that series in Seattle.
The way that they've used Verlander, too, like, I think ultimately they are going to go against Seattle because Fromber, I think, is going to pitch an inning on the 19th tomorrow. So that means he's not going to start on Thursday against on the 21st. Verlander's only been pitching like once a week, and even once a week's been a little bit too long. So if he just pitched on Saturday to the 16th, I don't think that he's going to pitch on 4 days rest and then the fifth day in that Yankee series. I don't think we see either Fromber or Verlander until the Seattle series, which might work out better in the long run. I think we're probably going to see like Luis Garcia, Christian Javier on that 21st, maybe even like an Urquidy. I think we'll see a combination of those three. I think we'll get two of those three for the Yankee series. Like, for Seattle, on a scale of 1 to 10, though, I want to ask you this and then get your answer on the other side. Seattle, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much of a threat do you think they are to steal the division? We'll ask it to the Hive as well. 713-780-ESPN. Are the Mariners a threat to steal the division? 713-780-3776. But do they push you as well where you would be more inclined that you want to make a trade ahead of that August 2nd trade deadline? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how much of a threat are the Mariners to steal the division? 713-780-ESPN, our HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. What do you think?
I can't go higher than 4 right now.
That's where I'm at. I think I'm like a 3 or a 4. Yeah. But if they get swept in Seattle, right. I think I'm at like a 7.
So that's exactly where I'm at. I can't go higher than a 4 right now. But I was also basing it on the fact that I thought going into the break they were going to have a double-digit lead. The fact that now coming out of the break, depending on what you already mentioned, they don't play. You got two tough ones against the Yankees and then a big one against the Mariners. If you come out of that reeling a little bit, then that ramps up quite a bit because now there's plenty of season. Everybody says, oh, the All-Star break. It's the midway point in the season. No, it's not. Thankfully, you're further down the road than that. But you're still not to the finish line, and there's still enough space between now and the end of the regular season, that's not insurmountable by any stretch of the imagination with the amount of times you still have to play within the division and play them. So, yeah, I mean, if they lose the series to the Mariners next this coming weekend, I think it ramps up at least two or three notches.
Even if they lose the series, though, and they fall, like they lose two of the three, you still have an A-game lead. Like, mm-hmm. To me, it's got to be the sweep for me to elevate that level of concern. And, like, what if you ask the Astros?
Because I don't think they. I think they've been there, done that, and seen it so many different ways, so many different times in the last 5 years that they would just kind of yawn at you and go, yep. It's another year.
I think they're like at a 1 or a 2. Yeah. Like whereas we're at a 4, they're probably like a 1 or a 2. Not Santa on Twitter saying a -27, but I think that these two texts 713-780-3776 they give you like each side of the spectrum. 8437. There's still a whole other half of games to play. Seattle's only 9 games back. Astros can't afford to not make a deal before the deadline. If Brantley and Yordan miss extended time past the All-Star break, you can't afford to play the offense they played this series. But then you have the other side of the spectrum, 1460. The Mariners aren't going to win every game the rest of the year. They've won 14 in a row, and it'll even out over the next 70 games. The Astros are a way better team than them. We'll be fine. So I think those are the two extremes right there.
Yeah. I think that's right, but I think that the time is not now to panic, but I think that you have to be very careful that the time to be concerned is could be coming up if they don't handle their business.
6-0, 3-0, not a chance. They're hot and fall off like normal. We need to find a combat for Brantley. I bet he has a tear in his shoulder. That is concerning that he took a swing and is like, oh yeah, this doesn't feel good. Like that is something that I would like to have some insurance for, right? Like, the fact that Brantley took a cut, took a couple swings, and is like, you know what? This doesn't feel right. Fly me back to Houston so I can get advice from the dude who performed my surgery a couple of years ago, which Dusty talked about that and said that Michael Brantley feels better after talking to that surgeon than he did prior to talking to that surgeon. But that's still something that's concerning. Like, I want to bat on this team because we asked that question too. Like, the fact that Seattle's within 9 games of the division, does that make you more interested in a trade? I don't even know if it makes me more interested. Like, I'm already really wanting a bat, especially if it's for a second-tier prospect. Yuli's been playing a lot better lately. His average is like 300 over the last 20 games or so, which is great to see. That's great. I hope he does that the rest of the year. I hope he's a batting champion from here on out the rest of the season. But I do want the insurance just in case he's not, but then also somebody who has the position flexibility that can also play a little bit of left field in case mm-hmm. Brantley's not back, that can DH a little bit when Yordan's in left, that could potentially be a middle-of-the-order bat if you don't have Yordan because he has a hand injury for the next 2 to 3 weeks.
I think the way you look at all of this is don't expect Alex Bregman, no matter how much of a resurgence he's had, to hit 300 because he dug too deep of a hole for himself at the start of the year. So you have to do what you are very good at doing, and that is a deeper dive into the more specific areas of from the month of June on or the month of July yeah. on. I mean, Maldi's the best hitting catcher, I think, in the month of July.
Yeah.
So, you know, you look at that and say, well, that's a huge positive because it's not going to change his average a whole lot, but the fact that you realize that he is making positive strides gives you a reason to be optimistic. Same thing with Yuli, same thing with Bregman. But the other issue is, again, we're not playing for the division now. You're playing for the best chance to do what you've been able to do multiple times, which is get back to another World Series and win it. So you know your biggest competition in the American League is the Yankees, and then how do you match up against the Dodgers and the Mets and the best of the National League? If you feel like there are moves to be made that can take you up a notch, that can improve certain key areas where you might be have some shortcomings, I think that's where it's advantageous to just explore the market, see what you'd have to give up, and see what your best options are across the board because that's what any good general manager and organization should do.
I would bet that Click's doing all of that, mm-hmm. right? Like, he's turning over every stone. Now, he might not get far on some of those conversations. Maybe you're asking for player X. Maybe you're asking from Josh Bell for Washington. They're like, you know what? We need Hunter Brown. Okay, well, conversation over. Like, I firmly believe James Click is exhausting every communication that he can get out there of, okay, you know, we might be in the market for this, we might be in the market for that. Let us know what it's going to take, because he's not doing his job. You're right. And he's not doing that.
And, Jeremy, here's the thing. It's not like some of those quirky websites, those auction sites, where you have to pay for every bid you make and then, you know, see how far it goes and then see if you won the auction to get, like, a bike for $4, right? James Click's not getting docked every time he picks up the phone. He should be doing his job, calling and exploring every single possibility from Trey Mancini and Josh Bell to whoever the hell may or may not be available. And the worst case scenario is someone says no and don't call me again. He's not being traded.
Right.
In which case, I would still call them again at some point before the deadline going, hey, still got a chance here. We've got a deal to be made.
They're not charging him by the minute, you're saying?
Yeah, exactly.
Click's got it unlimited on his phone.
Yeah, but it's on you if you never pick up the phone saying, oh, we heard mm-hmm. he wasn't going to be made available. How do you know unless you ask?
Yeah, I think Click, I mean, if you're a GM in baseball or any sport that isn't doing that, you should be fired on the spot, because that's the bare minimum of what you should be doing. ABC Eric says the Mariners can chase these cashews. Ain't no one worried about the Pacific Northwest. They do this every year where they go on a win streak. People say, watch out for the Mariners, only for them to fall flat on their behinds. Julio Rodriguez is the real deal. Mm-hmm. Like, if we talk about Seattle for just a moment, because I also don't think Seattle ultimately is going to be a threat to win the American League West. Now, if we're talking a week from today and the Astros just lost 3 in a row against Seattle, I'll probably change my opinion because we'll have new information. I look at Seattle, and I love Julio Rodriguez. I think he's going to be one of the better players in all of baseball. They have some other young pieces. People like to point to J.P. Crawford as one of the better defensive shortstops, Ty France.
Ty France has been a very, very big, bright spot for them this year.
I believe that their pitching staff's been really good. I don't believe their pitching staff is sustainable to this point, though. Like, Robbie Ray, good free agent acquisition, but, like, how much are you going to put your eggs in the Logan Gilbert, Marco Gonzalez, right. Chris Flexen basket? Like, that's going to carry you forward. I still think they're a couple years away, and I think they're probably a couple arms away, if I'm being completely honest.
And some of the moves they made, you know, Jesse Winker's a guy that was, you could hang your head on the fact, former All-Star. He's kind of underachieved since he's gotten there, but he's experienced, and he's better than what they had. But when you look at it, it's been kind of makeshift. I would say the one thing that you can be more sure of if you're a Mariners fan than a year ago is you won't be sellers again. That shocks everybody when you were firmly in a playoff race and trade away your closer. But I do think that they're still a couple years away from that sustained winning that they're after by building around Rodriguez and the guys that they have, that they're not going to go overboard this season and go too far too quick, so that they screw up the overall big picture.
Yeah. I mean, they just recently got into the playoffs. Like, if the season ended today, they would be in the playoffs. But, you know, what are they going to look like in the second half? I think that they're in a far better spot this year than they were last year. I actually don't disagree with DePoto trading away Kendall Graveman and getting something while you can for a guy you know is going to leave you in free agency when you don't think you're a real contender. But I agree with you. This year, they are a playoff team mm-hmm. this year. I just don't think it's in the division title. I think it's
but you're
more
already
wild card.
There, so don't go, you know, over buying.
Well, I mean, if they could be like,
but I'm saying don't go over buying so that it hinders you in the next couple of years when you really see more young players develop, and you may need to go out and get a couple free agents.
I guess it depends on the player, right? Like, if it's Juan Soto,
that's a young player, right?
That's a little bit of a different conversation, which people are asking us about Soto as well. We'll talk about Soto in the 1 o'clock hour. I don't want to go there just yet. 7223, like Aaron Rodgers would say, R-E-L-A-X. Relax. I don't think we're panicking, though.
No, we're just discussing.
We're at a 4 on a scale of 10. Now, I would be panicked if the Astros get swept in Seattle. I will be panicked at that point.
I wouldn't say I got the read that you were panicked, but I will admit, when we talked pre-show, I thought you were a little bit more concerned than I think you are.
My biggest, like, I think if we want to, like, say radio terms, my strongest take coming out of the All-Star break is more, like, everybody's focus is on the Yankees doubleheader. When out of the first 5 games out of the All-Star break, the 3 in Seattle are more important than the 2 at home against the Yankees.
What if they lose 2? Because you keep saying you'll be concerned if they get swept.
I guess it depends on the doubleheader. Like, the doubleheader comes into play there. Because if you lose both games of the doubleheader, then you lose 2 of 3 against Seattle. Now you're looking at a division lead of 7 games, which is something that's a little bit – that's not as concerning as 6, obviously, right? I would be okay if they lost two of three, especially with a split in the doubleheader. If they get swept, that's the only way that a week from now when we're doing this radio show, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5, where I'll be panicked. If the Astros get swept in Seattle, is the only way I'll be panicked in a week.
I mean, to me, it's like I think we're realists. And realistically, there's a bug on your radar that wasn't there a week ago or a month ago or, you know, basically since you started 6-6, once you kind of righted the ship, there really hasn't been a reason to worry at all. And now suddenly, you know, there's something on your Doppler that's telling you that there's a storm brewing coming from the Pacific Northwest, and you got to pay at least some attention to it, because the last thing you want to do is ignore it, and then you don't evacuate, and then you get completely crushed by Hurricane Mariner.
I was going to say it's like you got a cold. And in COVID times, you're not that worried about a cold, but you're a lot more aware of it, right? You're keeping an eye on it, seeing if it develops and gets worse.
Yeah. There's a storm brewing in the tropics, Brendan. We're keeping an eye on it. We're not panicked. We're not deciding to evacuate just yet, but we're not going to ignore it either. We're going to monitor it to see what it might bring.
8437, if three games is all it takes for you to change your stance on the Mariners being a threat, don't you think they should already be viewed as one? No, because the standings matter. Like, it's the lead in the division that comes into play. 6 versus 8, very different story. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. All right, do you continue to eat food every now and then that you know is just going to destroy you the next day or sometimes even that night? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
This is Heisman Trophy winner Troy Smith, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5. Go Bucks.
Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Do you every now and then just continue to eat food that you know is going to do some damage? Either, you know, it could be 30 minutes, it could be 3 hours, it could be the next day. Ocho already saying that he's had lunch today, one of the fine taco establishments.
Johnny Davis recommended it.
Oh, that's right.
Boom.
Yeah, it took me a second. But yeah, Johnny Davis recommended it. Yesterday I had some wings from a local, it's not local, it's very much a brand. It's very much a chain. Mm-hmm. I usually do it about once or twice a year, but it's just, I don't know why I do it to myself. I really don't. Like, I always regret doing it because it hurts the next day. It hurts that night. Is there anything like that for you where you continue to eat some food even though you know it's going to do a number?
Yeah, I mean, I think that from time to time, it just depends on, you know, where you are. I might be looking forward to the fact that there might be a chance to have, you know, a steak, a really good steak for the first time in a long time.
That does a number on you?
Well, you got to remember now. The more my wife cleans up my diet on a daily basis.
Steak like, does that?
Like if you,
man,
Jeremy, if you like seriously, if you, and I don't go to the levels that she does to go full vegan or anything. But I'm like, I've really clean, and you know this. I mean, I'm a pretty clean eater as it is, but and I only have the one cheat day.
Yeah.
But fried food or red meat, if you don't eat it like consistently, your system, it's not rejection mode, but it's basically sending you a middle finger and saying, we don't do that anymore.
Wow.
So there is a payback to be had.
I never want to be in a situation where red meat is on this list.
I'm just telling
for
you.
For me. I love wings. I'm gonna wing an aficionado, but it's this one specific place. There's also like an American, like a restaurant that is very American style food that will.
What about chips?
It depends on the chip.
If we go fajitas, but I overdo the chips and guac and the chips and salsa,
I'm usually all right for
the chips. Again, have an adverse effect. If I don't eat the chips, but I do tortillas and the fajitas and everything else, I'm fine. But sometimes if you overdo the chips, it can. Do that.
There's a very specific place where their chips and salsa will do that. There's a very specific place where their wings will do that, and I did that last night. There's a couple of others that are just like not on the top of my mind right now. Brendan, do you have any that there's some certain foods that you have every now and then? You'll do it every now and then because I do like the wings for me once a year, maybe twice a year, but it just I regret it immediately. Anything like that for you?
Have you guys ever heard of the fine dining establishment called Taco Bell?
Yeah.
That's where Ocho was
That's
at.
Where Ocho's still in the bathroom.
But beyond that, and that's obviously on the list, but just in general, cheese and chocolate both give me issues.
Mm.
I am allergic to both.
Okay.
There's dairy involved in both.
Are you a little lactose intolerant?
Yeah, yeah, I am lactose intolerant.
There you go.
Oh, okay, I figured it out. Look at Detective Branham on the case.
Me too. I was right there with you. We both diagnosed. It was a dual diagnosis.
The thing is, like, cheese hits me way harder than if I, like, just drink a glass of milk.
Really?
Yes.
You have the law firm that handles pitching for the Astros. You've got the MedRx right here. We handle your medical
needs. But I, like, I got to tell you guys, I will never stop eating cheese. Cheese is like an important staple to, of course not, Joel.
You're right, coming from America.
It's an important staple of my diet. I probably eat cheese 5 days a week.
So to his point, I will say Taco Bell used to always do that to me. And the other one that has been a killer no matter what, and it may be the sauce, I don't know, but Chipotle.
So Chipotle I'm okay with usually unless there's too much of the red hot sauce.
The payback on Chipotle, anything, something in their chicken in the sauce. The Chipotle payback is, it got to the point where it wasn't worth it anymore.
Is it a Listeria?
Is that a Def Leppard album? Oh, no.
No, that was a Chipotle thing. Don't sue me for slander. It actually happened. For me, it's the red hot sauce that goes on the Chipotle. Like, if I don't use that, I'm completely fine. If I use it, but it's the right amount, I'm still fine. But if it goes too much or, like, whatever's on my stomach that day, then good game, Branham. Like, it's not a pretty sight. What are those foods for you? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Are there other things, too, though, that you immediately know that you're going to regret the next day? Maybe it's not food. Maybe having a drink too many, something like that. What are those situations for you? 713-780-ESPN.
The other one that on the flip side, too, that's a good thing. But, like, Lisa gets these cinnamon rolls that are, like, literally, they're vegan, but they don't taste it. And they're literally like a square that when you pick it up, you realize it feels like you're almost lifting weights. That's what's behind it. And they're so damn good. But you know that after finishing it, there is going to be hell to pay. And it is not going to be a short-term process.
Yeah. That would be something that'd be a little bit painful there. Somebody texting in saying extra spicy. How do you say this? Tikka masala? Gets me every time. Is that the chip or is that like a special dish?
I don't know.
Or is that like an Indian dish? But anyways, but I still go for it 3 to 4 times a month. Like, you got to really love it because, like, there's a risk reward, right? Like, if you love something at the state of, like, on a scale of 1 to 10, if you like it at a 10, then you're pretty much willing to risk everything. But if you like it at, like, a 4, like hot Cheetos. Like, hot Cheetos, like, I like once every now and then. But I know it's not going to feel good. So I have it maybe once a year and just reteach myself the lesson that this isn't good for you.
Cheese is a 12. If doctors told me that I would die if I continued to eat cheese, I'm not saying I would just be like, well, screw it, I'm going to die anyways. But I'm not sure that I could get myself on track and just cut cheese out of my diet.
You just cut your life short and say cheese is just too good to surrender.
That's a lot of brownie points you just got with me today.
Yep. And cheese. Yep. Cheese across the world.
713-780. Cheese is thicker than blood. So that's actually, we've taken a lot of steps in the right direction today, me and Brendan.
Let's go out to the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Rob, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. Go ahead, Rob.
What's up, guys? Thanks for taking my call. Two foods that come to mind almost instantly. First one I know is polarizing. I love candy corn every Halloween, but I know I'm going to eat too much of it, and it's going to kill my stomach in about 10 minutes. And the other one, when it's late at night and you just want cheap Chinese food, Timmy Chan's Chinese food, you are just, go ahead, you're signing up for a membership of the toilet the next day.
Membership you don't want to have.
Rob, are you still there? Would you go Reese's?
I am.
Would you go Reese's peanut butter cups or candy corn?
Oh, no, Reese's.
Okay, Reese's, all right. I want you to be rational about your love of candy corn. That's good.
I can't believe that.
Candy corn, candy pumpkins, it's all good.
No, it's really not.
Appreciate it.
It's actually the exact opposite.
Appreciate the call, Rob. I cannot stand candy corn. I used to like them for one Halloween when I was like 6.
Then you ate too many?
I don't even think I ate too many. I just learned. I was like, this is not good. Like, I understand there's tons of sugar, which 6-year-olds love, but I cannot stand this candy.
I could not eat enough for it to become a problem.
You love candy corn?
No. I'm saying it's not good enough. I would get sick of it, the taste of it, before I could have enough to get sick of it.
It's like, it's not a bad taste. Like, you eat one and go, ugh. But there's so many better candies out there that it should never be a selection, to Brendan's point, that you want to eat multiples and like a handful of them when you have other things to choose from at Halloween or otherwise. Like, there's other candies that, like, should not even be in consideration. Like, ugh. those like those rubber styrofoam like bunny things. Those things are absolutely atrocious. They shouldn't
styrofoam
eat.
Bunnies?
You know, you're referring to Peeps?
Yeah, Peeps.
It's just like the like pretty much just sugar. Like
yeah, but it's a weird texture.
Fabricated into
and
a
again,
weird texture?
And it nothing tastes anywhere near decent enough to say, yeah, this is so delicious. I'll pass on the Reese's and the Snickers and the other things I got going for me. Even the Cadbury eggs. I'm going to go to that? No.
Yeah, candy corn's out for me. 8437, my wife is Venezuelan. Their food consists of fried and a whole lot of cheese. I eat it because she loves it, but I always know it to follow what follows when I do. See, that's what's interesting there, though, is like you're not even doing it for yourself. You're doing it for your wife. Like,
but that doesn't sound right either. You shouldn't be taking one for the team on that. There's too much goodness in that.
Yeah.
The cheese and a lot of the fry. I mean, where's the problem?
No, see, I would enjoy that food, and I would, like, that's fine. That's great. But for me to, like, get to the point where, like, I'm, you know, going to fill it, to do some damage,
or, yeah.
Like, I want it to taste good for myself.
Yeah.
Like not to put a smile on somebody else's face. I'm going to be selfish in that regard. 0446, the jalapeno sliders from White Castle, and I don't care because they taste so good.
Do they, though?
I've had White Castle once in my life. It was not a jalapeno slider, and I don't have any interest in ever going back.
I believe it's the most overrated fast food on the planet, and I believe that you in a microwave with some frozen burgers could do exactly what White Castle does.
Yeah, they sell it in the frozen section.
Well, believe me, they should keep it there and stop selling it in a drive-thru, because unless you're drunk, there's no way it should be an option.
I was going to say, White Castle is maybe an elite drunk or high snack.
See, I also don't think it's regional. Like, it's not going to be a thing in Texas. Like, there's not a many White Castles in Texas. Here, it's like a Whataburger.
Yeah, if you go to Whataburger, at least it tastes damn good, and that's a great option whether you taste it or not at 2:30 in the morning, as opposed to micro burgers. I don't care if they come in multiples of six. It's not going to do anything justice that says I ate what I should have eaten.
9221, hot chicken. The hottest one. Had one before the night my son was born, and oh boy, that's tough. Like, you should probably monitor a little bit of, like, I mean, you don't always know when your son's going to be born, but that's a tough one to swallow.
Literally.
The next day, you're like, you're in a bad spot because of that. Cinnamon rolls do it to me every time. The rolls at Texas Roadhouse, that's Keith. I didn't realize that those could be dangerous. Those are very good rolls,
yep,
because they're really good. And then also the cinnamon butter that they give you is fantastic. I've never had it do damage to me, though.
No, I don't think so either. I think back when the Black Eyed Pea was the thing, the restaurant chain, and you could get their rolls were fresh, and then you get the brown gravy.
Yeah, it was good.
Oh, my God, it was almost a meal in itself.
I miss Black Eyed Peas.
I do, too.
Good,
yeah.
Pool. That's been a while. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go back out to the HRMP listener line. Ryan, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. Go ahead, Ryan.
What's going on, fellas?
What's up, man?
Anyways, I wanted to talk about the decline of Whataburger, man. I think it's, I don't know, maybe it's just me getting older or whatever, but I think Whataburger is starting to taste worse. What do y'all think?
Man, I didn't expect this 12:56
That's
in the
slander.
Monday.
It's way better than Jack in the Box.
Okay.
It's way better than McDonald's.
It to Jack in the
I'm
Box
saying,
or McDonald's.
But you hear me out, though. If you're going to say that it's slipped, what is it slipping behind? No matter how much you think it's slipped, it's way better than Jack in the Box. It's way better than McDonald's. It's way better than Burger King. It's the only option. Yes, it is. Without question. Are you an In-N-Out guy?
I love both. Like,
do you animal style or whatever they call it?
I'll do sometimes. Not usually. Every now and then on my fries. I didn't know they did that at In-N-Out.
Yeah.
They do egg on a burger at In-N-Out?
Yeah.
I did not know that. I love an egg on my burger.
Do you really?
Oh, it's so good.
Ugh.
It is delicious. You're
nope.
not. It is great.
Nope.
It is great. I do, like, Whataburger's greatness is that they do so much. Like, In-N-Out Burger versus Whataburger Burger, give me the In-N-Out Burger. But what pushes Whataburger over In-N-Out is that they do a variety of different things. The taquitos, the breakfast on a bun is underrated and very good. Their shakes. Like, what pushes Whataburger to me over In-N-Out is the variety. But burger versus burger, give me In-N-Out.
See, I go Whataburger because it's fresh. And the way that they grill them. I think it has a better taste to it. And then because, you know, you can quickly, they do whatever you want and max to whatever level you want it with whatever, however many stickers you want on it. You can customize anything in a moment's notice, and it satisfies the craving, and it's all fresh.
6602, if you eat one candy corn, you'll regret it. I completely agree. 713-780-ESPN.
What about those rubbery peanut things? What are those, Brendan? Those suck, too.
I think those are circus candy.
Well, that's what they should stay at the circus.
I think it is circus candy.
It's awful.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of those either. All right, Texans training camp is opening up in about a week and a half. Football season is about to be here. So today we start counting down from 10 to 1 the top 10 storylines entering Texans camp. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about my good friend, Doc Linville. Absolutely fantastic. Doc Linville has the answers and solutions to you who think you are going bald or your baboon's butt on the back of your head or your eight head from a forehead is just going to continue to get worse. Doc Linville and the NeoGraft procedure can help. You don't have to shave off all your hair. He's got a solution, and it's your own hair. It's not the cover-up methods, the sprays, the foams, the creams, the things that are only masking the problem. It's taking your hair from areas where you have a ton of it. And genetically, whether you know it or not, the sides and back are never going away, no matter where else you might be going bald. So they take, and they're very meticulous about this, every third or fourth follicle until they get enough to either go to where you have a bald spot or a thinning spot, and they change the overall appearance of your hair while your own hair, as it's replanted, grows and gets stronger and thicker and gives you better coverage and a better appearance with every day that passes by. You need to check them out because as an ESPN listener, you get a free consultation that normally costs $150 to meet with Doc Linville and his staff, and they can walk you through everything from the 95%+ success rate of every follicle they move to the finance options, to the entire process and what it takes, and answer all your questions to see if it's right for you too. Go to 975hair.com and book an appointment. It's free. Meet with them. You don't have to do it. You're not on the hook to go through the procedure. It's just an informative session to see if it's right for you, like it was for me and so many others here at the station and otherwise. And it is a game changer, I'm here to tell you. My hair continues to get stronger. It gets thicker. My eight head is back to a forehead. It is absolutely fantastic. Check them out today. Tell them I sent you by 975hair.com. Go see my friend, Doc Linville.
Years of research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now. Do it. Do it. Do it.